Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. And right now we are checking in with First Elect Woman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield. Good morning, Brenda. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So, Brenda, I don't want to start controversy, but last week, you kind of know where I'm going. The two headlines out of Fairfield did not look good. You had the Ward student who was arrested for making a racist Snapchat post, and then you had another situation where the school had to go into lockdown because a student possibly had a gun. That did not end up being the case. But it sort of, you know, drives the conversation this morning. You know, where are we with, like, student behavior, protocols, things like that? So I don't know if you could get us started on that. That would be great.
Right. So, well, you know, I have about as much information as you do. So the student that did this Snapchat racist remark was charged by police. Was expelled. The school's investigating, as is the police department. I'm not sure what's going. I haven't gotten any more details than that. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention it in my newsletter Friday because I didn't still have enough information. I'm hoping to connect. We're gonna. I want to talk to the superintendent this week. Hopefully today, along with our police department, just to get a bit more information. Mm-hmm. And then the other incident again. Police were never called to that event. To that incident.
Right, because it was like a student had called them the day it happened, but they didn't even come till like the next day when the school was like, wait a minute, this could be an issue, right? Wasn't it something like that?
Yes, it was ambiguous. It was parents talking to other parents, and the school never called the police, is what I'm saying, for this
right,
sort of thing. And I think there may have been some confusion about what was going on or what happened. So I know that I don't have all that information, but the police weren't called.
Yeah. So what do you
at the time of the alleged event?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think somebody said something like, "I'm threatened somebody with a weapon." I don't have all this, but there was no weapons. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, you know, Brenda. I guess, you know, when it comes to look, I mean, you and I both know we're connected with kids constantly, you know, and I think, you know, we're very aware of the fact that bullying is a problem, certainly threatening. It continues to be an even bigger problem, obviously, in schools. I'm just curious, like, are there conversations happening with the superintendents as far as like protocols in place? You know, I know we kind of opened this up to the audience last week. One of the things people said was, why do we even allow cell phones out of lockers? Like, why has that become so mainstream now to have your phones with you when you're in the classroom or things like that? I don't think that answers all the issues we're seeing in schools, but I didn't know if, like, you guys are having constant conversation about student behavior.
Well, listen, that is really the purview of the school district. You know, I run the town, they run the school district.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I know when my son was in middle school and even in high school, when cell phones became more prevalent, they weren't allowed to carry their cell phones.
Right. We weren't either. Yep.
Around. They had to be in their backpack, in their locker,
mm-hmm.
And they would be taken away. So I don't know if that policy has changed in our school. I mean, listen, I think as a society as a whole, everyone's on their phones way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it.
It's true. Oh, no, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're not interacting with people. You're constantly have your face in your phone. And listen, kids are supposed to be in school learning, not on phones. So, yeah, that's probably something I'm going to talk to them about. And I'm sure the Board of Education is going to be reviewing it. You know, we do have a Board of Education. We have a school district and an administration that is trying to handle. You know, listen, it's been a really tough year. And this is not to minimize anything that happened. This situation with this young student being having this racist thing happen, it's despicable, mm-hmm. and embarrassing, mm-hmm. and horrible. And it should never happen to any student in our town, let alone the state of Connecticut. So obviously we need to be having more dialogues. You know, I established the racial task force back last year in the fall after all the protests that happened. We're having conversations. The task force is having conversations with members of our community, different stakeholders, with the school district. And, you know, I can't say for, you know, certain, because I don't know the young person who did this. So I don't know what's going on in their household or their family or with that child. But, you know, we have to have a lot of conversations with one another, I think more openly and honestly, to figure these things out and work with each other, because we know we can't tolerate this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're talking to First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield. And on a I hope, a lighter note, Brenda, you know, this week, big changes coming to businesses. They're basically getting the allowance to say, hey, we're either going to allow for masks to be off for fully vaccinated people, or we're keeping them on. I know just at the church I attend in Fairfield, they have basically made like a hybrid model where some parts of the church, if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear your mask. You could sit right next to another stranger. Other parts of the church are outside. Other parts are going to be just masks on. Like, it's a big enough facility where they're basically accounting for everybody. But not every business has that opportunity. What have you kind of put out there for local restaurants, shops, when it comes to them basically becoming the police of their own storefronts and making those decisions?
So I think it's going to be a little tricky over the next couple of weeks.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. I sent this out in my newsletter on Friday with the updated sector rules and sort of a synopsis from our health department. And I sent out an email to our staff, and this I included in the newsletter, about our complete reopening of Town Hall on the 19th. Now, we've been open the whole time. We made modifications, and we had appointments, and we had drop boxes, and we had all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're reopening completely, right? So the discussion last week was, okay, with the emergency management team, how do we reopen safely, not just for the public, but also for our employees? So what we've decided to do is, and you can't ask someone, are you vaccinated?
Right.
Because it's a HIPAA violation.
So
we can't go into the town clerk's office, for example, and say, hey, you guys can all take off your masks if you're all vaccinated, because then it kind of singles that person out who might not be.
Gotcha.
So the message I sent to my employees in a email on Friday was, okay, we're reopening on the 19th. We're going to require public to wear masks for the time being. If you are uncomfortable not wearing a mask, you can continue to wear a mask while you're working. So it's not as if everyone knows you're not vaccinated. Or maybe you are vaccinated and you just feel more comfortable wearing the mask for a while longer.
Sure, sure.
So we're going to require public wear masks for the next period of time, just to see where we are. And as you said, the CDC said if you are vaccinated and you are in the presence of other vaccinated individuals, you can remove your mask. Those are things the department head will work out with the staff. But right now we are advising businesses to do what they think is safe. So I got an email from one of our local boutiques downtown last week saying, Brenda, what do I do? How do I know if someone's vaccinated? What are my rights? I said, you can absolutely put a sign on your front door saying masks required. It's your store.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you want people to wear masks in your store for this period of time, then that's your right. It's your business.
Right. Then do it. Well, First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick, it's always a pleasure to connect with you on the air. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Okay. You take care, Melissa.
Thank you. You too.
The latest from the state capitol about your own neighborhood. Connecticut Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff stops by Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600.
Senator Bob Duff, it's pretty crazy. We're only 24 days away from the session coming to a close, and I know there's still some pretty big topics on the table. Let's start with marijuana. Last month, there were questions about social equity provisions in the bill, and even the governor said maybe we need to hold off on this for another year. Could you give us the latest on the marijuana legislation?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, all the listeners out there. Beautiful Monday morning. What I understand that there are still conversations going on. That is obviously a very important piece of the bill. While there are still 24 days to go in the legislative session, I certainly believe that we can still get it over the finish line. I know that everybody's working in earnest to get it done, and we may be on the 10-yard line on this issue. So I think it'd be best if we're able to get it done this year rather than wait another year, because then you have to start all over again. Mm-hmm. So I'd say let's keep working on it.
What are the equity provisions, if you don't mind me asking, Senator Duff?
Well, I'm not part of those conversations, the minute details of the conversations. But, I mean, a lot of it has to do with, how we're treating the licenses and how ensuring that, everybody has an opportunity to be a part of the legal cannabis market, meaning that it's not just set up for the highest bidder, that, you know, traditionally, people of color have been targeted for either dealing or purchasing marijuana, especially in the inner cities or urban corridors, and have had a lot of the fines and jail time and suffered the consequences of that policy for decades. And so trying to make sure that not only do we ensure that everybody has access to be an entrepreneur and to have the ability to sell legal cannabis, obviously under certain circumstances, but also that cities across Connecticut also reap in some of the benefits of the money that is generated as well.
Mm, okay, makes a lot of sense. We're talking to Senator Bob Duff this morning. Another piece of legislation, or I don't know where it's kind of ended up now. I'm not sure what it's called now, but the mansion tax that was proposed a while back. My understanding is that was kind of killed by the governor, but then it was sort of reinvented and put back into another piece of legislation. What's the latest on tax hikes in Connecticut?
Well, that's all, everything's part of the budget conversation. I know budget negotiations will happen this week. Right now, that's part of the entire process of looking at what money is being spent and where it goes and how to raise that money. And, the good news is that there's an additional surplus that has come in, or additional federal money that has come in as well. So that's all very good news for us. As a matter of fact, our rainy day fund is completely filled up with $3 billion, and we're putting close to, I think, $1 billion this year on paying down long-term pension debt that had been accumulated for 70 years. So that's very good news as well. So we're also going to be looking at the federal funding that's coming in, and we passed a bill a few months ago that deals with making sure that the legislature has a voice in that. It's not just money that is spent by the executive branch, so we're going to be negotiating that as well with the governor's office.
So I think it'd be safe to say, correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Duff, that we wouldn't really need any kind of a mansion tax then.
Well, like I said, I don't know that it essentially has been called the mansion tax, but again, what it's trying to do is to help to flatten out kind of where you have some towns with very low mill rates and some towns with very high mill rates, and put some of that money back into the towns that actually provide the services, such as, look at a city like Bridgeport. They have a lot of the social services. A lot of those nonprofits don't pay property taxes. Hospitals, colleges don't pay property taxes. State, places like motor vehicle do not pay property taxes. Homeless shelters do not pay property taxes. And those tend to be concentrated in the urban areas, not in our suburban areas. So it's just looking at ways and trying to be more equitable. Now, whether that happens or not, nobody knows. And it's, again, part of the budget negotiations. And I'm certainly not going to negotiate that in public. But I would say certainly that the good news of more federal money coming in and and a larger surplus certainly bodes well for us in the state.
It's just interesting, Senator Duff, because I would think that a lot of your constituents would fall under the category of paying this extra tax. I mean, you're talking about people whose homes are at least $400,000 or more. That's a lot of people who live in your towns and cities that you represent. So I would imagine they don't like this idea.
Well, nobody likes more taxes, obviously, and this would be for assessments. You could always, certainly in negotiations, raise the assessments. You could reduce the amount that would come in. It'd be about $50 potentially, per house. So we're not talking, hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars. It's not a tremendous amount. And again, it all depends on whether how this budget all gets put forward. You know, and I would say that if, you know, people are opposed to it, they should speak out about it. And that, you know, my friends on the other side of the aisle, I will also have to say, may criticize different aspects of the budget, but, you know, for the third year in a row, they have yet to put forward any kind of ideas or budget that they and priorities that they would like.
But wouldn't you say, Senator Duff, that we're getting, like you just mentioned, we're getting money from the American Rescue Plan, we're doing great with our rainy day fund, so wouldn't it just make sense to be able to use that money that we know for a fact is coming from the feds? Like, I understand beforehand, we didn't know what we were getting from the feds, but now we do.
Well, not all that money can be used just to plug holes in the budget, so it has to be used for very specific purposes, and that's part of what the governor put out, what he was using, what he wanted to use money for. The legislature is going to respond this week as to what we'd like to use the money for, and that'll be part of the entire budget negotiation process.
We are here with Senator Bob Duff this morning, and one more thing I wanted to ask you about, Senator Duff. What about online gambling and sports betting? I feel like we kind of hit this big, like we got to a really big part of the voting process, and then I haven't really heard much about it. So do you have an update on that this morning?
Well, I think that the fact that that is still, I actually was talking about it late last week about it. I think the final details are being put on the bill. Again, these are all very complicated you know, pieces of policy, and because don't forget, the legislature has to vote on, has to ratify the agreement, and it has to go to the Bureau of Indian Affairs within the Department of Interior. So this stuff has to be signed off on, and it has to be perfect the way it goes. But I think that'll get done relatively quickly as well. That'll get done before the end of session.
Okay, you think we'll have that all buttoned up and everything before the 24 days are out?
Yes.
Okay.
Even though it doesn't seem like a lot of time, there's still time. Not time to do everything, but there's still time to do lots of things that we need to get done. You know, we'll be in session this week in the state Senate. We're expecting to be in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and potentially Friday as well, and then continue on until June 9th.
Senator Bob Duff, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you.
All right.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
All right, Senator Tony Wong, good morning. I have very similar questions for you as I did for Senator Bob Duff earlier in the show. We have 24 days left before the session is over. And it sounds like, according to Senator Duff, he does think we're going to get there with marijuana. He is fearful that if we push this back another year, that we're going to have to start this whole thing all over again. Do you think that marijuana is going to pass before the session is over?
Well, I hope not. But unfortunately, there are significant concerns of why it was not raised. The issue in regards to social equity provisions really is about fairness, looking at the potential revenue that's derived from marijuana sales to the communities and individuals disproportionately impacted. Because right now, it seems the movement and the people that are going to benefit from it are big business, meaning distributorships, deep-pocketed individuals that are making investments. And the social equity provision, which I agree with, is an important point of consideration. But none of these discussions, Melissa, talked about the health and social consequences of marijuana. It seems like we're brushing that aside and not addressing it from a standpoint that we are a society that is looking at opiate addiction and substance abuse addiction. And we are now saying as a state, for the sake of revenue, we're going to legalize marijuana because everybody else is doing it. While at the same time, we're looking to control substance abuse and addiction. And also, as we have as a legislature, it's kind of ironic that we seem very content and very focused on banning tobacco and vaping because of its addictive nature. While on the other end, my hope is the overwhelming efforts to ban tobacco and flavored tobacco and vaping are the same people that says marijuana and its potential health implications and impact on individuals towards addiction is a point of concern that hesitates it.
I was going to say, the other thing, just to kind of like piggyback what you're saying, the thing that I'm worried about that nobody seems to be able to address is the fact that, okay, so the thing I'm worried about is I get the idea that, you know, let's make marijuana legal because it takes it off the black market. I do think that's a very important thing. But on the other end of things, when you talk about getting rid of flavored tobacco products, doesn't that now just force that to get back on the black market, which you then don't know what it's laced with? Fentanyl, it could be laced with rat poison. I mean, anything. I find it to be interesting that you've got, you know, one side where let's ban this, but that could just lead it back to a black market sale. But on the other end, you've got marijuana that right now that has contributed to the opioid crisis because people are getting it illegally.
Well, you can look as a basis of comparison, Colorado, California. And the reality is, in legalization, we have legitimized the black market. The fact that we are using it for revenue and taxing it at about 25% on a taxation basis will create a greater need for the black market. And you can't differentiate anymore is the fact that it becomes all legal. Mm-hmm. So the social ramifications, and ultimately, here's the important question. If you're doing this for money, it's the wrong way to approach it. We have not even addressed the public safety issue in regards to people that are under impairment, that are driving, that are there's no standardized test to test individuals that are driving impaired under marijuana. The whole host of communities that have been disproportionately impacted, we have community church leaders have come out and said they've seen the effects of drug use impact their community. So let's put it this way. To do it for money is the wrong way. Maybe we can have a real discussion about it, but to put aside all of these social concerns is irresponsible in my thinking as a legislator that is given the responsibility to do this. And did anybody remember that the governor said maybe we should do this as a public referendum and let the voters of this state make that decision? Where's that going right now?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, the fact that even the governor, when he first entered office, you know, said, listen, this is like one of the first things he wants passed was the marijuana bill. I think it's interesting that he was willing to say, you know what, we're not putting enough time into this. Let's push it another year. That, to me, you know, tells you something. When the governor, who is, you know, gung-ho about getting this happening, is saying, listen, we're rushing this too quickly. We're talking to Senator Tony Huang this morning. I do want to get to a couple of other things I'm curious about. Online gambling and sports betting. I know, like, Bridgeport, for example, would be one of the locations that would benefit significantly from this. But I haven't really heard anything on any updates passing this or dropping this. What are you hearing this morning?
The governor reached an agreement with the two tribes.
Yes.
Which, in a usual compact that's unique only to Connecticut, we have struck a deal with the compact back to happy birthday, Governor Lowell Weicker. Today is the fact that the compact allows our two tribes exclusive and monopolistic control over all form of gaming, and we have to reach a deal with them in order to get the approval to do online and sports gambling. In return for that, we get 25% of slot revenue, which the state of Connecticut has benefited significantly. So that's the trade-off we have. Unlike other states, which gives permits and licensures, like New York and Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, we are unusual in the state in the sense that any form of gambling, even lottery as well as keno and any other form, has to meet the approval of the tribes because we have relinquished monopolistic control to them on that. So as a result, online gambling, sports betting has to be in agreement with the tribes. So as a result, we have reached an agreement. At least the governor has.
Yeah.
The details are sketchy, and the governor's included in his budget, which is more than we've ever done before in regards to online and sports gambling. But the devil's in the details, Melissa. Here's the problem again. Addiction, social services, and consequences, no discussions about it. The other concern is the fact that we have many sports teams, college sports teams. What do we do with sports gambling on that? The third component is for people that are addicted or really hone in on their phones, playing Candy Crush or any of the various games that they play with, If you put a gambling denomination on that, you're allowing a whole new generation of young people who can now gamble online, and
but to
there
be fair,
is no
don't,
social consequences.
But to
that.
Be fair, then why do we have major casinos here? Like, why do we even have, you know what I'm saying? Like, I agree, but I think it kind of goes back to, you know, an initial point, Senator, where I agree, like, you know, we don't want to obviously push people to want to become addictive to something like gambling, but we also already have things that we've made completely legal and attainable on a daily basis, like casinos in Connecticut.
The huge difference, Melissa, is this. You're looking at online gambling and what we've seen in the last year and a half with the social isolation that occurs and people's ability to get online and do endless hours of search and work on computers. And the other part that looking at sports gambling, you know, ESPN has gotten into the game. The fact is you are looking at a population 18 to 35-year-olds, men and women, that gamble on sports. And those are two distinct differences from going into a gambling institution where there's a social reinforcement and there are safeguards in regards to kind of addiction and overwrought gambling. When you're doing this online under the privacy of your own home and you're looking at sports that is all around us, listen. Look at England that has on sports gambling. Every sports television event now has gambling on it, even though it's not allowed in the state of Connecticut. If you will legalize sports gambling, you're going to see even more gambling advertising. It'll displace beer as the next advertising venue. Everything you see will have an angle on sports gambling. Every game that you will have and enjoy for the pure sanctity of the athletic and sports competition no longer becomes relevant. It is about point spreads and what happens on the gambling consequences.
Got it.
That's not how I see sports. And well, it's tremendous, tremendous implications. It's the next growth industry for the gambling industry, and they are keen on it. Online gambling, sports gambling is the next revenue source for them.
Well, we'll certainly keep a close eye on this. Senator Tony Wong, thank you so much for coming on, sharing all this morning. We so appreciate it.
Lieutenant Jim Perez, Fairfield Police Department. Crime on the mind. Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
So, Lieutenant Perez, I know we're going to dive into how businesses should handle the shift on Wednesday, basically kind of becoming mask police men and women of themselves. But first, I just wanted to really quickly get your take on the big news out of New York City this weekend, the fact that the Pride Parade is not going to have the NYPD present. They will have some off-duty officers a block away. But my fear with this was that this now puts a bigger target on the backs of the LGBTQ community because you now basically have no armed officers there to protect you. I don't know if I'm off in saying that, but I didn't know your thoughts on that this weekend.
No, you know, it's funny. They're following the exact same kind of like defund the police type thing mantra. And what they don't understand is that there's real danger. Listen, anywhere that you go, I don't care where you go, but police are always working in the background quietly. And so so most of the time we don't even realize that police are involved in certain events and certain things because sometimes you don't see them. Sometimes they overtly are out in uniform.
Right.
Sometimes they're just back in the background. But the fact that you would have an absence of police at a large gathering in today's day and age, in my opinion, is completely nuts and crazy.
That's what I thought.
I think that it's ill-conceived, yeah. And you are going to see, unfortunately, you will see issues. It's going to happen. So
well, and also, I was going to say, Lieutenant Perez, also, you have a community that, unfortunately, is under scrutiny. I mean, the LGBTQ
right.
community, that's what this Pride Parade is for, is they're looking for equal rights, and they should have them. But to me, I think you already have a population that is under scrutiny, and taking police mm-hmm. out of the picture, I just think is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and here's what happens. Imagine if, and this is like a comparison, but imagine if you were like to take away or just not pay or get rid of all of your insurance right now. That includes health, car insurance, house, property insurance, just everything. Just get rid of it. it's the same thing. Like you're setting your family up for disaster because
right.
you're going to have massive amount of bills and you're not going to be able to live. It's the same thing. Police are almost like insurance. Like, they're behind the scenes. Some people like them. Some people don't. But guess what? When you always need it, there's a comfort there. Mm-hmm. And so police bring that comfort to people, especially in times of need. And I think they're making any time a group, a large group, or any event does not want police involved, you're asking for problems. End mm-hmm. of story. It's just you're asking for trouble. So,
yeah.
And, you know, and then it's anybody's guess as to what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
I just think there could have been a compromise here, Lieutenant. Like, I think, why not? If you didn't want specifically the NYPD, because I get the tie there. I get that, you know, the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community, it started from the police raid in New York City in Manhattan at an underground gay bar. Like, I get all of mm-hmm. that. And I know that this mm-hmm. is the 50th anniversary. So if the NYPD mm-hmm. is the issue, like, why not compromise? Why not just find another police department or ask for, like, the guard to come in or something? I just think having no police presence
security,
is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, it's like, you know, sometimes you don't agree with everything the police might be doing. And, you know, and you have that right not to agree or have your own thoughts.
Right.
But the bottom line is every single police officer across the country that's a good person with good intentions will always put their life on the line for you. And that's massive, if you mm-hmm. really think about that. That's mm-hmm. pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people would do that these days. Not a lot of places would do that. But this is just another attack or another assault on police, and it shouldn't be happening.
We're talking to Lieutenant Jim Perez this morning of the Fairfield Police Department. Now, switching gears, Lieutenant Perez, we've got a big day coming up Wednesday. Mandates going away. The state basically cannot get you in trouble if you do not wear a mask. And they're asking for mm-hmm. an honor code system. They're saying, look, if you're not vaccinated, mm-hmm. we expect you to wear a mask. Some people will follow that. We know others will not. What are you sort of suggesting for businesses now when it comes to, I've already seen it, actually, ever since the CDC said, mm-hmm. listen, if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. I have gone into stores, Jim, where mm-hmm, literally people mm-hmm. have walked in without a mask on, and the store clerks are like, mm-hmm, wait, mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. not even Wednesday yet. Like, we haven't decided what we're doing yet. It's already starting. Yeah. So what are you guys kind of prepared mm-hmm. for, and what are you telling business owners this morning? Like, how can they prepare themselves?
Well, here's the thing. We're going to expect an influx of complaints, I'm sure, from certain people who feel vulnerable. But the reality is, at some point, this is at this time a year ago, right? We were almost on the opposite spectrum.
Yes.
If you wore a mask, you looked a little weird. And those who didn't have masks were the normal, right? As we were heading into the pandemic.
Right, right.
Now, it's obviously in reverse. Everything is in reverse. So I know people don't like change and they don't like to kind of look at things, you know, or have these rapid movements. But I will tell you this. We need to start heading in this direction because the reality is, and the science talks or speaks and says that, you know, we're at a low rate in Connecticut, and the virus is going away as more people get vaccinated. You know, as a matter of fact, the medical profession and scientists are saying that the virus is working better than they, I mean, that the
vaccine is working
yeah. better than they even expected in the wildest dreams. So that's phenomenal. It's taking on variants. It's starting to kind of, you know, they're showing that those that are vaccinated aren't spreading it. So here's the deal. Wednesday is D-Day, right? That's when everything changes. I look at it this way. I still carry a mask, even though I'm fully vaccinated, right, and have been for months, I still carry a mask with me in my mm-hmm. pocket because I want to respect those. Because you're going to, listen, there's going to be a lot of nervous people. There's going to be a lot of nervous employees. And so if an owner decides of a restaurant or a store, no mask, no service, then simply put your mask on.
Yeah, just
even
have
if you're
it.
Vaccinated.
Yeah.
Just have it. Because you know why? It's about making a clean transition, a peaceful transition.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody fears differently, and everybody has a fear level, you know, at a different level than everybody else. So in order to be fair to everyone or to be, you know, respectful of everyone, if they ask you to wear a mask, you wear one. I was out this weekend, and I was happy to see a lot of people not wearing masks outdoors, and it felt great, mm-hmm. I got to tell you.
It feels amazing. Oh, I love it. Yeah. Are you kidding me? It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I just know there's that odd, like you said, we want a clean transition, but I think to do that, mm-hmm. I think you need respect. I think we need to respect each other. Yeah.
And patience.
Yes.
And you know what? And not get into petty arguments, but I'll tell you what. You still can't break the peace, and we will be out there to actually enforce that if it need be, you know, if it comes to that. you still can't break the peace. You still can't be disorderly. I mean,
so if you go into a business and you fight a business owner because they want you to keep a mask on, you will get in trouble by the police if you're violating that store's policies.
Well, not necessarily if you're violating the store's policy, but it's how you react or how you act in public. So if you start acting disorderly, there are laws against that.
Right.
If you start breaching someone's peace or the area's peace, then we can enforce that.
True.
But we're not going to enforce just a restaurant policy because, number one, that's a private decision made by a private entity. The
right.
governor has made it clear
right.
that he's given people choice, right? And so that, like, take Fairfield, for instance, right? Wednesday, it's mask-free. All the town offices open. But guess what? We're still requiring people to wear masks when they enter inside
right.
the building.
Right.
So
that's
for the employees, they have options. If they're vaccinated and they feel comfortable, they don't have to wear it. So every entity and every government at the state, local, and every private person is going to have really their own policy.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have restaurants that say, they'll take away their no mask, no service signs, but then you'll have others that are unvaccinated that probably feel that they want to protect their employees and they want to protect their customers a little bit more. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think
right.
the majority, what they'll actually do is they'll eventually, like restaurants, for instance, indoors, they're probably going to still keep the mandate where they kind of separate tables. They'll probably keep barriers up.
They're going to slowly ease. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure all their employees are still going to wear masks, which I don't think is a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing either. I certainly never feel bad about, Yeah, I think it's hygienic as well. I think so, too. Well, that makes a lot of sense, Lieutenant Perez, and I appreciate you talking about both matters. Yeah. Definitely a top of mind for a lot of our listeners. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Have a great week.
All right, thanks. You too. Bye. That's Lieutenant Jim Perez here on WICC 600.